I'm Chaplain Karen Eden. For years, I worked as a TV reporter and journalist, covering the stories assigned to me. Today, I'm on a different assignment, and I'm taking orders from a different boss. I've combined my reporting skills with my spiritual ability to come up with a new assignment, the Eden Assignment.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Eden Assignment. I am your host, Karen Eden, and I'm truly honored to be able to be with you on this radio blog once again. What I'm going to do this week is a part two on a discussion that I started last week about worthiness. And I don't know if you heard that show, but I would like to encourage you to go back and listen to it. It's on my blog, Facebook, The Eden Assignment. I put all my radio blogs on that group page once the radio show actually airs. And this is pre-recorded live airing Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then the link is available 24/7 from there. So anyway, if you haven't heard my first show on A Sense of Being Worthy, please go back and listen to it. And then this one will definitely resonate with you even more so. But in a nutshell, what I was talking about last week, is that how important it is to have a sense of feeling like you're worthy, because a lack of worthiness will cause you to make very poor decisions and judgment calls in life. So, again, you can find that on the Eden Assignment Facebook group page. And now, this week, I want to continue that, and I would like to talk about a lack of worthiness causing a false interpretation of who you really are. And I'd also like to talk about it also causes you to misjudge who you choose to partner up with in life. So first of all, let's talk about how not having a sense of worthiness messes with you as far as your interpretation of yourself. You know, it's very interesting because most of you know I've had a very long, lucrative television career. Counting my radio days, which I started as a teenager live on the air, I probably have well over two decades of experience in broadcasting journalism. And one thing that was always interesting is when somebody is no longer in that business, whether they can't get another job or whether they just are moving on to a different part of their life's journey. A lot of people really get hung up on the fact that they're not on TV anymore, for instance. And I can see how it would happen because, you know, when you have a career in television, you become a celebrity, you know, whether that's a local celebrity or a national celebrity, it's still celebritism. And there's a lot of perks that can come with that. But what happens is you wrap up your identity into that career choice of being a celebrity. And once the rug is ripped out from underneath of you, and it will eventually, then all of a sudden you find yourself without an identity, or you find yourself with a false sense of what your identity really is. It's a very scary thing when anybody wraps up their identity in something like local celebritism or any type of spotlight, fame, fortune, sports, you name it, because that is the perception of what people look to you to be. But it's not necessarily who you are on the inside. You're someone who may have worked hard, and you may be someone who got some really lucky breaks, and you may be both. But that's not who you tend to be on the inside. So I know a lot of people are very shocked when they have, like, someone from television, maybe they meet them or they have them speak at an engagement. And when they're one-on-one with them, they can be very kind of shy and backward. But all of a sudden you put them in the spotlight and they just kind of like jump up to life and they fit into that role and they play that role. That is very common in my profession. If you were to work, for instance, in a newsroom, you would find a lot of people who don't talk to anybody. They kind of just stay to themselves. And all of a sudden you put them on the spotlight and that camera light goes on and they're a whole new persona. And that's because they're presenting an image of what they're paid to be, but that's not necessarily who they are on the inside. And when you get into the position where you no longer have that celebritism, it can really be a head game. I'm going to tell you, I'm even guilty myself, and I've been accused of being someone who is rather introverted when I'm by myself or around, you know, surroundings that are familiar to me or unfamiliar to me, I should say. You put me in a small group of people I don't know, and I probably won't say a word. And people are shocked to see that, because being someone who was a TV and radio personality, you would think that I would be a lot more personable. Over the years, I've learned to, well, fake it better, for lack of a better way to put it, because my true nature is not to be an extroverted person. And I notice now that they've actually coined the phrase an extroverted introvert, which is somebody who, in their true nature, doesn't mind being the lone wolf, I call it. But, you know, when they go out and they have to deal with the public, they will become extroverted. And that is a learned behavior, ladies and gentlemen. Trust me, it does not come natural. And it comes from a place of knowing and understanding that we are all connected as human beings. You know, people will see you and expect you to be a certain way when they meet you. It's hilarious. I've had many jobs in many cities across the country. And, you know, when I'm doing that type of work, if I go in and I'm recognized, especially in a smaller city, you become a bigger star in a smaller city. And you can't even really go sit down without people whispering and staring at you. And you'd think that's great, but it's not. Because if you're an introverted person, that drives you nuts. I mean, you're like, I just want to get out of here. That's your first instinct, to want to leave and vacate the situation. But over time, you learn that, you know, these are people who expect you to be a certain way, and you will find yourself honing up to being that expectation. So you go out and you be personable, you know, at appearances, and you do what you have to do. But then it crashes when you're no longer in that role, and a lot of times there's an identity crisis. I mean, I was in that business for a long time, and then I got out, and I got to tell you, it took me years to try to figure out who am I and what am I supposed to be doing now. But there are some people who never recover from that. I mean, they just cannot get a grip on what their true identity is. You know, I'm fortunate, and I say this to you a lot of times, I never really took myself very seriously in that business. I was good at it. I did it for a long time, 20, maybe more years, counting my radio years. And it was very natural for me to do that type of work, but I never took myself real serious, and so it didn't really mess with me as much. You know, as I was actually working in the ghetto teaching martial arts to street kids and homeless people, and then I'd go do my TV show at Fox News right after. I've always been wired a little bit different that way, so it wasn't real hard for me to transition out of anything. But I do have a lot of coworkers to this day who are just actually scarred from not being able to be on TV anymore. If you are the type of person that is gaining every bit of your self-esteem or your worthiness, as we're talking about, from being on TV or being that famous karate master or being a football player, whatever it is that your dream is, if your entire identity is wrapped up into that, there is going to come a time and a day, my friend, where that's going to be a hard fall. And nothing lasts forever. Eventually, that fall will come. Now, martial arts is a little bit different because you have very loyal fans, very loyal people. Because if you train, you know that somebody else is trained. It's like a brotherhood. It's like, oh yeah, you know, they have the same mindset as me. And for the most part, we all do have the same mindset. Sometimes that's not good. But, you know, I always say martial arts, the martial arts family is a lot like country music fans. I always got stuck doing country music and radio a lot of my career, and that's a whole other show. I never really cared for country music, but I don't know. I guess I had played that role very good. But country music fans are very loyal. So even when you tried to go hot new country and debut all these new stars to get rid of all the old-timers, all the ones you remember from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s that were around forever and ever, they found that the country music fans were still very, very loyal to those old-timey fans. That's just the way they are, and that's wonderful. You know, somebody, an old-time country music star walks in, they're still going to get treated like a star. But that's not the case for everything else I've ever done in my life, you know, especially in television. It's kind of funny. Once in a while, somebody will recognize me now, and I haven't had a TV contract in years. But, you know, it's all usually because of my voice, not because of the way I look. I look nothing like I looked in television. I don't mean that in a bad sense, I hope. I just kind of went with my natural self, with my heritage being a, you know, an ethnic girl of many ethnicities, I should say. And, you know, when you're in the TV news business, they don't really want that. They want you to kind of represent this professional look of the people that are watching you. So, yeah, that's some really bad hairdos, guys. That's all I can say about that. Okay, worthiness. Last week we were talking again about how when you don't have a good sense of worthiness, you make poor judgment calls that can actually lead to, you know, an ultimate acts of evil even, and crimes, malcontent, doing things to hurt other people. I've traced that personally back to a lack of a sense of self-worth somewhere along your journey, being pummeled and battered down to the point that you're willing to just do anything that you can to put yourself forward at anybody else's expense. It's a sense of a lack of self-worth. Moving forward this week, talking about the identity of what you do for a living or career, if you're someone that craves the spotlight, that false interpretation of who you are, it's a hard foundation that you have to relay when you come out of a career like that and have to get into the real world. I mean, you know, it may take some time for you to figure out what your journey is and why you're supposed to be here. But, you know, you keep on that journey one foot at a time, even if you're stepping in the dark, and you will get there. I would also at this time like to talk about how your lack of self-worth or unworthiness, let's just say unworthiness, will cause you to make very poor judgment calls on who you partner up with in your life. Listen, especially my female warrior comrades, my martial arts ladies, it is incumbent upon us to impress upon these young girls that who they decide to hang out with will ultimately culminate into a decision that may have life consequences. You know, if someone says, well, I'm dating this person, I don't really care that much about him, but you got to be careful who you hang out with, because you know what, girls, you can fall in love with anybody. That's right. You can fall in love with anybody. Who you choose as a life partner is a reflection of what you think of yourself. And when you know your self-worth, when you truly know your self-worth, you'll wait and you'll choose someone that's going to be a partner that reflects your own individual self-worth. Very important lesson that I don't think the girlies are getting today. I know I didn't get it. I had to discover that myself, and unfortunately I had to do it the hard way and the long way, like many of you out there have had to do. But especially girls, you know, a lot of girls will date people that they don't really, they'll date them because that man, the young man, pursued them, and that's why they're dating them. Listen, because somebody's pursuing you isn't a reason to date them. You know, that affection or attention that you get, or the fact that you think that somebody loves you, is very attractive to a young girl because your self-esteem is still being developed. But you don't need to fall for anybody who, just because that they are pursuing you. You know, wait. Ask anybody who's been through the trials of a hard marriage, and they will tell you, listen, man, it's better to be alone. And a man, woman, doesn't matter. They'll tell you it's better to be alone than to have to go through the tragedy of breaking up in relationships in many, many forms. And so I want to encourage you, especially if you're a young lady listening, you know, you've got to have a sense of self-worth. That way when you get to the point where you're going to choose someone as a life partner, you'll make good judgments and decisions of how they're going to treat you. How they treat you is a reflection of what you think of yourself. So if you're willing to put up with somebody that mistreats you verbally or emotionally, that's a reflection of what you think of yourself. And that reflection comes from, a lot of times, the way people treated you. You see what I mean? It's a trickle-down effect. Worthiness, it always trickles back to something. And our goal and my goal here is to make people feel worthy. Sometimes it's hard to do because there are some people that I don't know. They're hard to, like, what's the word without offending anybody? Well, they're kind of hard to like. Let's just call it like it is. You know, some people seem a little narcissistic, you know, and you got to recognize for that, for what that is. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I do have a dog. I'm going to yell in it a minute, and then you're going to think really bad of me here. But I don't know if I can take the barking because it – okay. Hey! Shh. All right. Where was I? See, now I totally forgot what I was going to say. Getting back to a sense of self-worth. Oh, man. That was good, too. All right. I'll figure that part out. I'll probably get back to it in just a second here. Okay, guys, so you know I'm a very spiritual person. You know, but I believe in Jesus Christ. And I dispense a lot of advice on the Eden assignment, and I want you to know that I'm not just doing that from my own experience. I actually am a trained counselor. I'm a seminary graduate, spiritual counselor, and ordained chaplain. And I'm not out to do anything more than to sit in my purpose of why the Creator put me here. And that's why I do what I do. And I've been doing it for many years, actually. Once I got out of the television business, this was what I felt my calling was to be, and I hope to move further in that venue as well. But I want to let you know that I do deal with a lot of people, and I'm speaking also a lot from experience as well. But it's a real problem when you pick a life partner that you've discovered all of a sudden, too, a couple of decades later even, that, man, what did I do? I mean, really, what was I so blinded that I couldn't see the way this person was? And that's a lot of heartache, especially when you have children involved, because now, you know, now you've got the double whammy of, am I going to be willing to go this journey alone with my kids? And, you know, there we go. It's better to be alone than to have to go that type of journey. And it looks like the latest surveys are showing that 50% of the women in the United States of America are going at it alone. People think that's bad. I don't really think that's necessarily bad. I think that comes from a place of women are finally getting smart and saying, hey, if I don't find the right person, I'm not going to settle. I'm not going to settle. You know, the latest statistics show that if you're not married for the first time by the time you're 30, you probably won't ever get married. Interesting, huh? If you've been married before you're 30, you get divorced, there's a good chance you'll get remarried, but it'll be within the next few years. Those are stats, and I believe that stats were made to be broken. I've broken many of them many times. But, you know, that's what they say. They're looking at the latest surveys, and that's what it looks like it's going to be. I think that's smart, though. Sometimes it's better than to have to take on the luggage of other people, because when you're in a relationship, we're all just human people. I mean, we're going to take on luggage. And if you have your own luggage to carry and it's heavy, how are you going to take on somebody else's luggage? I don't care how perfect the marriage is. You're taking on luggage, guys. You could be married to a saint and you're taking on luggage, because we all have our own life experience that we take into relationships. Eventually, it will rear. And your ability to be able to communicate through that is going to be very, very important. And it's hard. You know, you've heard that. You know, marriage is about good communication. What does that mean? I mean, everybody talks, right? Hey, we're not talking about communicating when everything's coming up roses, guys. We're talking about, can you communicate when the chips are down? You know, that's the hard part. And when you keep it to yourself and keep it to yourself and keep it to yourself, it becomes an issue. So it would be better just to get it out and have that person blow up at you than for you to keep it inside yourself, because that's what causes the seeding of major rooted problems eventually. You know, it's actually healthy to blow up once in a while. That's what they say. It's okay. You know, eventually you're working it out. I'm not talking about emotional abuse, but I'm talking about it's okay to get loud in your voice if you have to. Work it out and then come together and just come up with a healthy solution. And that's the best way to handle any kind of relationship. And it's not always easy to do it that way. All right, getting back to the spiritual side of things. You know, I always find it interesting when people think because I choose to worship God, I'll put it that way, making God the worthiness of my life, that I must have a sense of unworthiness or a lack of self-worth. And it's quite the opposite. If you're a spiritual person, you know what I mean. I mean, it's so wonderful to know that there's a creator that has designed my tapestry of this life, and that, you know, I can depend on him and be fully reliant, and you know, not have to worry about just, you know, am I making all these mistakes with my life? Because the bottom line is, when you have faith, you reside yourself over to a higher power, and then it just takes that pressure off. And I'm so grateful for that, that I don't have to have the pressure, the added pressure of being more than I even have to be. I like to tell people all the time that I make mistakes all the time. I do, because people get this image, and I think it's just the way my voice sounds, that I am just, you know, perfect, on top of everything. Couldn't be further from the truth. I like to tell people about my mistakes for a couple of reasons, because it gets the pressure off of me, and then maybe you'll learn from something that I screwed up on. I'm not going to lie to you. I've had to build my entire foundation over as a young girl. I had nothing there, guys. Just nothing was laid down for me in any way, shape, or form. I did become someone who believed in Christ as a young girl, and that helped mold me a lot. But I still made a lot of mistakes and had to take a lot of that foundation out and rebuild it and put some stuff back in. I'm still doing it. There are things that I have to formulate I still haven't figured out in my life. It's a journey. All these people, these religious people that you may see and go, they think they got it all together, their life's so perfect. And I think that's a real problem, that they present an image of being perfect, you know, wearing the suits and the nice cars and all that stuff. And people go, well, they obviously don't have the problems, you know, and that's why they're like that. Well, that's not true. I think that the religious community could do a better job of being a little more, lift the veil a little bit more and let people see your human side, so that they know that you have made plenty of errors in your life, and your spiritual leadership came from a place of screwing up and picking yourself back up. That's the truth. You know, just being a little more visible that way, as opposed to putting on an air, I think the world would definitely appreciate that more. And I'm reminded of that myself many times, and I know I have this perfect voice and I sound perfect. But if I haven't made my point clear, I want to let you know, I still have struggles. I still need Father God, my creator, and I'm so glad that I have him, because my worthiness is in him. And that's a real hard thing to understand if you're not a spiritual person. You know, I have a lot of people in my path who aren't spiritual people. Why, I don't really know, but they are in my path. And a lot of times they bring that up. What does it mean that, I mean, what kind of a God is a God that would make you worship him? I don't think you understand that your sense of self-worth is in the ability to worship Father God, your creator, unless you're in that situation. And sometimes you need spiritual eyes to be able to see spiritual things. And if you don't have spiritual eyes, then you need to pray that you have spiritual eyes. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord, is what is written in the Bible. Once you get the spiritual eyes, you'll be able to see things in a totally different way. So that's the way the spirit realm operates. You can't, you know, it's like water and oil. You can't mix physical and spiritual. It just doesn't mix, you know. You can give it a good shake, and maybe it makes a good salad dressing. It doesn't really blend well. They're always going to eventually separate, because there are two different paths. And we do live in a physical realm, but to be able to walk the physical realm in a spiritual sight is giving that good shake before you apply it. Making it mix up each and every time. And that's the best way to live your life, because the spirit realm is huge. It's very present. That's nothing you're ever going to be able to get away from. I don't care if you believe in it or not. Innately, the creation of God is all around you. God created you, and you'll feel it in some sense. So, you know, I don't get into arguments with that stuff. It's just arguing. You know, people are set in their mind. People are willing to die for what they believe. I mean, people are willing to die for what they believe. So how are you going to win a little argument with that? But if they open up the eyes of their heart, and the prayer is that you will, if you haven't already, to take your spiritual journey, then you will see things very, very differently. I promise you. All right. Let me tell you about where I'm headed. I'd love to meet you. You know, listen, if you see me and I just kind of look the other way, please don't take it personal. I had somebody do that. I honestly, I just don't pay attention. And that could be because I'm not wearing my glasses, too, because I have a hard time seeing at distances. I can make up a million excuses. Honestly, I'm an introvert, guys. Really, you're going to have to come to me. I probably won't come to you. I'm not going to lie. A duck is a duck if it quacks like a duck. I'm introverted at times. So come meet me, and when you do, I'll be so glad to meet you. I'll be so humbled and grateful that you took the time to come out and say, Master Karen or whatever, hi, I'm so-and-so, from Facebook, or I listen to your radio blog. Please do. So anyway, here we go. July the 28th is coming up, and I'm going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm being inducted into the Korean Masters Hall of Fame. I'll be speaking there as well. And I'm really honored to be able to be in the Korean Masters Hall of Fame. They've been around a long, long, long time. And, wow, I don't know. I don't know why good things happen to me except the fact that I just try to be a good person. Seriously. It does work. Okay. August the 4th, I'll be in Washington, D.C. at the Who's Who in Martial Arts event under Grandmaster Jesse Bowen at the beautiful Gaylord there at the Inner Harbor. Man, is that a nice hotel. And I'm going to be emceeing that event. A lot of people are going to be inducted into the Who's Who book this year, and a lot of well-known martial artists and people just that are very deserving of it. And if you think you deserve to be in that book, you can hit me up. I'll get in touch with somebody on the board to get you nominated, and then you have to take it from there with your resume and all that kind of stuff. But all right, I'm on the board, guys. Hit me up. I'll forward it over. We'll see. Hey, the worst thing that people say is no, and I'm so used to hearing no, I don't even care. When people say, if I go for something, someone goes no, I'm like, okay, and then I go do it anyway. Listen, I don't, that word is just, it's not in my vocabulary. I find ways. Okay, September 28th and 29th, I'll be speaking at the Sport Karate Museum in Houston, Texas. The Power of Women, the largest gathering that we know of a female martial artist ever in history. Professor Gary Lee, I just talked to him the other day. And, man, this is going to be a historical event. I'm going to talk about ladies that won fights back in the 60s, like Mikey Rowe, moving all the way up. I'm honored to be here. And we're also going Saturday night going to be doing a quote-unquote roast of Mikey Rowe. I need to find out how far I can go with her. I don't want to make that lady mad. She still packs quite a punch there, the Mikey Rowe. So I need to find out what kind of roast we're talking about, the good roast or the bad roast. I got a lot I can say about Mikey. I love her. She's a good friend. But we'll have fun, ladies. So if you're any type of martial artist, come on out and join us. It doesn't matter what your rank is. We'll embrace you, give you a big hug. We don't care. This is a great group of women. Women in martial arts is a smaller percentage, obviously. Back then, it was like five. Back in Mikey Rose Day, there were like five martial artists that were female. I mean, her stories are really incredible. October the 5th, I'm going to be speaking and teaching at Baycombe College. A large amount of Cherokee students are there and attending the Muskogee Powwow. I want to thank the Military Order of the Stars and Bars of Colorado for sponsoring that trip for me. I do a lot of Native American work, and I'm honored to be able to do it, because these are young people who are under the radar that need a lot of help. And if you can just please pray for them, with their suicide rate being twice the national average, their drug and alcohol rate, their percentage of education is way, way down there, guys. Listen, they're like the worst ethnic group for being able to pick themselves up by their bootstrap and go on. And they've been, their ancestors were put in that mode where they're just oppressed and depressed. Their way of life was totally taken out from under them and confined to reservations. And you think, well, that was a long time ago. But listen, that gets trickled down. That goes on your kids. It does. Same thing in the African-American community. You wonder why things are like they are sometimes. Listen, when you oppress somebody just because they're no longer slaves, doesn't mean that that's not trickled down into their bloodline. It goes into their children. That mindset and that way of thinking stays there. That spirit oftentimes stays there. It's hard to break free from that. Pray for our ethnic kids, guys. They're part of this country. They're American citizens. I got to tell people that. I dress up in regalia and I do my talks, my Native American talks. I travel a lot and I do that. I actually have to tell people that, I'm born in Tennessee and I'm a citizen of the United States, because they really think that, I'm on some reservation or something. I don't know. People don't know, I guess, history. And of course, they don't really teach it right a lot of times, not the truth of what went down. The books are written by the winners, and I'm not here to get into that. That's another show sometime. But Listen, my bottom line is pray for Native America. Pray for all of our kids. I love them all. You know, I teach inner city martial arts, red, yellow, black, and white. That's all of us. And they're all my kids, every one of them. And I've never been mean to my kids. I've been mean to the adults. The adult students, ask my instructors. Man, I can get pretty brutal. But I'm never mean to the kids because I know that foundation's being laid and I want them to feel like they have a sense of worth. I've corrected them. But I've done it kind of like in the grasshopper way. You know, grasshopper, what do you see? And hopefully it works. Usually it does. But, you know, it starts with kids, that foundation. You need to correct from a place of love. You know, if you're a martial arts instructor, you know what I mean. You got kids and you got to correct them sometime in class, but it comes from love. You just absolutely love your kids. You would never want to cause them to not have a good foundation of self-worth. And all children should be like that coming up. It's so hard when you don't get it. I know that. You might know that too. But at the very minimum, we can pray. If you want to sponsor some of my work that I do with the young people out there, let me know. I like money, and I can always use it, especially when I do so much inner city work and I travel out with the young people. So I appreciate the sponsors that I'm getting picked up. And if that's upon your heart, you know, hey, listen, don't be afraid to hit me up. I promise I'll hit you up right back. I'm like Eugene Krabs on SpongeBob. Money, money, money. No. Okay. And speaking of that, if I don't get back with you, it's nothing personal. It's just that, and I have some days where I can't get to the messenger part of social media. And I will, though, as soon as I possibly can. So please don't take that personal either. You know, don't take anything with me personal. Sometimes I could probably use a better filter, especially if you're hanging out with me, but I try to be a good person, so, you know. All right, let's wind this up because I'm done. I don't really have anything else to say. Come on out and support me, and, you know, if you'd like to buy my books, let me know. They're out there. Just go online. Century Martial Arts has some, and then I have other books available through, let's see, I think Penguin Books picked up my Complete Idiot's Guide to Taekwondo. That one's been out there for quite some time now, and I got another one self-published about dealing with the afterfacts of a loved one who committed suicide. So anyway, you can look me up. My books are out there. And thank you for supporting my magazine work. Now over 20 years I've been writing for Taekwondo Times and MMA Success. I'm really honored because that means that, you know, I'm somehow touching people with my ability that I feel like God has wired me to put me here to do. So thank you. God bless you, and I will see you next week on the Eden Assignment. Bye-bye. Hi, everybody. This is Karen Eden from the Eden Assignment, and I would like to tell you about a very special sponsor for the show who also happens to be my longtime friend, Maria Vitale of Liv Sotheby's, real estate agent at Maria at mariasdenverhomes.com. And I want you to know that she can take care of all of your real estate needs from, get this, anywhere on the entire planet. That's right. Nowhere's too far for her to reach out and help you with all of your real estate needs. Her phone number is 720-366-5121. Again, that's Maria Vitale, real estate agent at Liv Sotheby's downtown Cherry Creek in Denver. Her email is maria@mariasdenverhomes.com. She's able to help you, and I can vouch for her that she's a good person, and she will definitely take care of you. So thank you very much, Maria, for sponsoring the Eden Assignment. And we'll see you all next time for another show.
The American Martial Arts Alliance, along with the AMAA Masters Radio Network, is launching Proud to Be a Martial Artist. This will be the theme of our 2018 Who's Who in the Martial Arts Legends Awards Banquet in Washington, D.C. on August the 3rd. Nominate someone for this great honor, someone that has made a contribution to the martial arts that has changed lives, that unsung hero that has done so much for the community, so much for lives. We want to know about that person. Visit our website, whoswhointhemartialarts.com, and make your nomination today. So many martial artists have lost the opportunity to share their story. Remember, visit our website, whoswhointhemartialarts.com, and make your nomination. For questions and support, Call 919-489-6100. The American Martial Arts Alliance, along with the AMAA Masters Radio Network, is launching Proud to be a Martial Artist. This will be the theme of our 2018 Who's Who in the Martial Arts Legends Awards Banquet in Washington, D.C. on August the 3rd. Nominate someone for this great honor, someone that has made a contribution to the martial arts that has changed lives, that unsung hero that has done so much for the community, so much for lives. We want to know about that person. Visit our website, whoswhointhemartialarts.com, and make your nomination today. So many martial artists have lost the opportunity to share their story. Remember, visit our website, whoswhointhemartialarts.com, and make your nomination. For questions and support, call 919-489-6100.